Okay, we're up to Perek Chof Aleph, Pasik Chof Vov. Okay, last time we're learning the din of the people, the whole concept of eye for an eye, that it doesn't mean literal, thank you, it doesn't mean literal and so on. Okay, so now the Torah says like this, Chiyaki Ishas Ein Avdei, if a person, and as Rashi explains from the Gemara, this is speaking about a person who owes a non-Jewish slave. And the pasuk says, "Chiyaki isha sein avdei," if somebody knocks out the eye of his eved, or "Eseina mosei," or the eye of his maidservant, the shichasani destroys it, meaning it's irreplaceable. That's it. So the Torah says, "Lachofshi yishalchenu tachaseinei," you send out the slave for free instead of the eye, in return for his eye. We have to see right away the next pasuk. V'mshein avde yishen amasa yapil. Or, what happens if you knock out his tooth of your male servant or your female servant, and again it refers to a goyish slave. L'chavshi yishalchenu tachashinai. You have to send them out free in return for his tooth. So basically the Torah says as follows. Normally if you own a non-Jewish slave, we learned already before in the psukim, you own them forever. There's no such thing that you can sell them, but basically you own them forever. But the Torah says, if you knock out their eye, or knock out their tooth, they go out free. So right away, the Gemara explains, the Torah doesn't mean only eye or tooth. The Torah means any one of what's called the 24 primary organs. And we first... What? No, I know this. I know, 32 teeth. Like Rashi says... The 5 fingers of the hand, 10 fingers of the hand, 10 fingers of the foot, the 2 ears, the nose, and so on. So there's basically 24 organs that if you chop them off, knock them off, in a way that it's irreplaceable, so the din is the servant goes out free, automatically. Now, the turret...
Accidental, what? Not accidental, or...
We'll soon see.
What do they take with them?
It has to be only, one second, it has to be only if you're intending to do it. And that's why the Mefarshim say it says, v'shichasa, with a dogish in the hay, which means it has to be when you had kavana to destroy it. But for instance, one second, if you're just throwing a stone and it happened to hit him and it knocked out his eye, he doesn't go out free. But if the Eved knew the halacha, let's say, and the master didn't, and he says to the master, maybe you'll pull out my tooth, and he pulls out the tooth, the Eved goes out free. Because it wasn't unintentional. He intended to pull out the knock out the guy's tooth.
Rabbi.
One second. What?
Intended to hit the person, but not specifically to cause that specific damage. The fact that the strike was intentional is all that's necessary, right?
Right. Right. Now, why does the Torah, if the Torah refers to basically any of the primary organs, why does the Torah use the expression eye or tooth? And if the Torah rather could have used one of them, either eye or tooth, and we would understand all the others. So it says as follows. Rashi quotes in the Gemara, because it's like this. If it would only say ayin, eye, I would think not a tooth. Why? Because an eye, you're born with. And a tooth, you're not born with. So I would think, if you knock out his eye, it's only because that's what he's born with. But if you knock out his tooth, you wouldn't go out free, because he wasn't born with it. So let the Torah only say tooth, and I won't need eye. But I need eye also, because if the Torah would only say tooth, I would think even if you knock out the temporary tooth of a kid, he would also go out free. So the Torah says, no, it has to be a tooth similar to an eye. Just like an eye is permanent, the only tooth that you knock out for him to go out free is only if it's a permanent tooth. So if you knock out his temporary baby teeth, then he doesn't go out free. But from both together, eye and tooth, we learn out any primary organ that you cut off and knock out, you're going to go free. Yeah?
Rabbi, It's all too quickly in the Chumash, in the Torah, whatever you want to say, about if a guy punches an eye out of another guy, that guy's got to give his eye, or he stay, or he, you assume he's locked up in prison for God knows how long.
There's no prison in Torah, but anyway, yeah.
I say, I can't prove it,
mm-hmm.
that the guy who knocked out somebody else's eye, if he's given a choice, you're going to go to prison. I assume that.
There's no prison in Torah.
So what, that they kill him right away? Is that
either he pays, or they kill him, or he gets whipped, or he gets punished. But there's no prison term in Torah as a punishment.
But I tell you, if you...
I know, that's why you didn't write the Torah.
I don't think, unless you show me the statistics, Rabbi,
Torah doesn't care about statistics. Let's go further. Come on.
Well, let me just finish my one last statement. That the guy who knocked out the eye of somebody else is given a choice, your eye or else whatever that is, I wouldn't give my eye up.
Okay.
I'd rather stay in prison for 20 years.
That's a good idea. Now, the question...
Isn't this vengeance?
It's not vengeance. The Torah is to punishing the person. We'll explain why in a second. Now, the question is, what's the reason of this? What does the Torah say, tooth and eye? Okay, it teaches us all the organs of the body. But why does the Torah mention these two, tooth and eye? So explanation is, the whole concept of slavery came into the world because of Chum in the Ark. If you remember the story that Chum, Noach's son, besides the fact that he sinned in the Ark, which he wasn't supposed to do, but after Noach came out of the Ark, out of the Teva, and he planted a vineyard, and a miracle happened that the grapes grew the day he planted the vineyard, and Noach got drunk. And if you remember the Chumash, it says, Chum saw his father's nakedness, went and told the brothers outside, right, and then the two brothers, Shem and Yafis, went backwards and covered their father's nakedness. So afterwards, when Noach cursed him, Chum was cursed that he was going to be a slave.
If there was no slave at that time, how come?
What's that? He cursed him that he's going to become a slave. Now,
did you
what?
Think he's going to become a slave?
Yeah, let me talk.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Okay. I told you get a hearing aid.
Later.
Now, what did Chum sin with? Two things. His eye and his mouth. He saw the nakedness and he told his brothers. Because of that, he was cursed that he's going to be a slave. The Canaan Chum is going to be slaves. So therefore, if you knock out his tooth or his eye, that rectifies the sin that caused him to become a slave. So the Torah says, if that's the case, then when you knock out his eye or you knock out his tooth, the slave goes out free because he cleansed himself, so to speak, became cleansed for the sin that caused him to become a slave to begin with. But again, this is only, again, by a goyish slave. It doesn't apply by a Jewish slave and so on. Now, what?
If the... I forgot.
Okay. What?
It's a little stretch because when you think of speech,
you
think of your tongue.
Shh.
You think of speech, you think of your tongue, not your teeth.
Right.
It's a stretch a little
but
bit.
But it says, no, but it says, well, you can't say a guy knocked out his tongue, I mean. But basically, the tooth, no, the Mefarshim say that the finalization of speech is actually with a person that doesn't have teeth, it's very hard for them to speak. Because the teeth actually formalize, you know, the actual thing. And here it says also, that you see from here that the punishment and the suffering that you knocked out one of these primary organs is actually a concept of kapara, forgiveness. In other words, as the Gemara uses the expression yesura memarkin, punishment that a person goes through actually cleansed the person. As you see in this case of the Eved, that because of the pain that he's suffering by knocking out his tooth or his eye, over there he actually goes out free. Okay, now, okay, next pasuk.
Does he take something, takes things with him, or a certain amount of what?
Whatever he, no, he doesn't own anything. As a slave, he owns nothing. So when he leaves, He just takes himself out.
So how do you benefit being a slave all that while?
You paid for him.
Huh?
You bought him.
Oh. But let's say if the guy who knocks out the tooth, the other, let's say the other
It's
guy
only if the owner knocks it out, nobody else.
Oh, I see.
This is only if the owner of the slave knocks out the tooth of the eye. If somebody else knocks out the tooth of the slave, then you pay money to the master. He does not go out free. It's only when the master himself, as the Pasuk says, he hit his own slave's tooth or eye. Okay, Pasuk Chof Ches. What happens if an axe shall gore a man or a woman, and they shall die? The person, sokol yisokol hasher, the axe has to be stoned, v'lo yeyochal es psari, and you're not allowed to eat the flesh of the axe, ubal hasher noki, and the owner of the axe is innocent. Now this is a din as follows. Normally we learned before in the psukim, we're going to learn more in the psukim, that a person is responsible for the actions of their animals. Therefore, if your axe damages somebody, you have to pay damages. In this case, the Torah says like this. If there were witnesses that testified that this axe killed the person, you have to kill the axe. Now, the question, why did he kill the axe? What did the axe do? The axe doesn't have brains. The axe doesn't have free choice. The axe is governed by instinct. The answer is the fact that something bad came about through this animal. This animal's purpose in life has to be terminated, so to speak, and the animal has to be killed. 1 second. Now, not only that, the Torah says, the sokol yisokol asher, you have to stone the ox. In addition to that, lo yeyochel es psari, you're not allowed to eat the flesh. Now, the question is, everybody knows if you want to eat meat of an animal, you have to shecht it. If you stone it, how in the world is not kosher anyway? What does the Torah say? You can't eat the meat. Of course you can't eat the meat. It's not kosher. So they say, so there's two things. One thing, lo yeyochel es besarei, the Gemara proves from various places, it doesn't only mean eating, it means benefiting. That means not only can you not eat the meat, you cannot even benefit from the animal. It has to be thrown out. You can't even give it as a gift to somebody. You definitely cannot sell it. And that, by the way, the punishment, the financial loss of the owner, is he loses his ox. Now, another way is possible, is what happens if the ox was gored, the ox gored a person, killed a person, and then Beis Din said, okay, now we have to stone the ox. But before they had a chance to stone the ox, somebody actually shechted the ox. They took a knife and right away shechted the ox. So now anyway, the animal was slaughtered, and then you stone him anyway. So the Torah says, even though you might be able to eat the meat, still lo yoyochel es psari, it's forbidden to eat the meat.
Why?
Huh?
Why?
It's also bano. The Torah says you can't even benefit from it. The animal, something bad happened through the animal, and therefore, because of that, the animal is forbidden to benefit from.
Why do you stone it after you shechted?
Oh, because the Torah says you have to stone it anyway. Right. Part of the process is stoning it. And therefore, even if you shechted and the animal died, you still have to stone it. Even people that Beis Din stones, we didn't learn too much about skila yet, but one of the four capital punishments is stoning. Stoning, people think, means the guy stands up against the wall and everybody throws stones at him. That's not what skila was. The Mishnah says, what was skila? They took the person to a thing that was like 2 stories high and they threw him off it.
How do you do it with the shore?
1 second. They threw him down. If the guy died, they put a stone on his head, just that he should be called stoned. If he's not, if he doesn't die, then the witness, the testifier, throws a stone at him, and then if not, another stone. But it's not that the guy's up against a stoning squad, you know, like a shooting squad, that you kill the guy. So the same thing with the ox. The din is that first the witness, one witness stones the ox. If that doesn't kill him, and the other witness, and then everybody does it.
How do you put the shore in this?
They don't put the, it's only by people. By the ox, they just stone it. Okay, so therefore, the din of the ox as a din of a person that was stoned, basically, you have to kill the ox. And even then, le'yoyochel es psari is forbidden to have any benefit from it. You see from here that even something that doesn't have free choice, like an animal which has no free choice, the fact, though, that something bad came about through it, so the Torah says you better not have anything to do with it. And this you find a number of places in Torah, when bad things happen through different things, the Torah says you can't benefit from it. You can't have anything to do with it. So you can't sell it to a guy, you can't even give it as a gift. Anything that the Torah forbids to benefit from, you cannot even give as a gift. Why? Because when you give a gift, it creates a relationship with the one that you gave the gift, and therefore you're benefiting from it. Yeah, whatever, anything that the Torah forbids, chametz and pesach, anything that the Torah forbids, that's it. You got to be thrown out, and you can't sell it, you can't give it, you can't do anything.
Isn't that a little bit of a cruelty to the animal? I mean, I know that the animal should be alive, but he couldn't be dead like that.
But he gore somebody.
No, but it's still.
They
kill animals
too.
They're
using stone now too with the dog.
Why don't you just finish him off with a bullet rather than, you know what I mean?
Well, because the punishment's in Torah is not by shooting with a gun. The Torah says, Sokol Yisokol Asher, has to be skila, which is the most severe of the capital punishments of human. There's four capital punishments, skila, sereifa, hereg, and chanek. There's an argument which one's the strictest, but the halach is that skila is the most chomor, is the strictest of all the punishments. And because this happened, so therefore you have to, human, the takola came through it, you have to get rid of it.
The harvest, the person suffering more than others of the pain, right? How you measure the
suffering? I don't know how they measure it, but the argument is in the Mishnah which one's the severest, and I don't know if it's because of the torture or not, that I don't know. But it just says that's the severest of them all. Now, what happens if the animal was pregnant? This is a female ox, and it was pregnant. So then, the baby inside is also forbidden to benefit from. What happens though, what happens, if this baby got mixed up with other animals, so the din is you have to bring them all into a pen, all these animals that got mixed up with, and you have to let them all die, eventually, and you can't benefit from any one of the animals, and I'll explain why in a second. What happens though, if this animal gave birth before it was brought to judgment? That means the ox stoned, I mean the ox killed somebody, and by the time they got it to Bezdin or whatever, the animal gave birth. So that animal, because it was born before the
judgment.
Court, the judgment of death, so then that animal can stay alive. Mm-hmm. And it's a regular animal. Now, there's a din in Torah that certain things don't become nullified. Now, when one animal which is forbidden to benefit from gets mixed up with other animals, so because you don't know which one is that animal, you have to give all of them the law of that animal. Like milchiks and fleishiks, right? So it becomes nullified 1 in 60. What happens if 1 ounce of milk falls into 50 ounces of chicken soup? So because, no, 50. So then everything is treif. It's not, doesn't become bottled, doesn't become nullified. So the same thing
goes. Eat it, huh?
No, you can't do anything. You have to let them all die, it says. You have to put them all into a pen and just let them sit there until they die. And then you can't.
Starve?
What? No, you can feed them, you just can't do anything with them until they die.
Usually ox does not have babies.
No, that's why I said with female ox. I mean, Rashi also says right away, ki yigach shard, Rashi says, echad shar, ve'echad kol behem achayi ve'if. Al-dir ben akosiv behevim. For instance, they bring down I don't want to use the word an interesting story, but there was a chicken, the Gemara brings down a story, there was a chicken in Yerushalayim, Tarnagel, Shahadega Satinuk. It killed the baby. It was Nakale Nikita. It kept pecking the brain, you know, the head of the baby.
A rooster, maybe, right?
The Tarnagel, yeah. It was a chicken, okay, rooster, no? And it pecked until it died, and Beis Din stoned the animal and was forbidden to benefit from and so on. So Rashi says, many psukim and mishpatim are not talking about, when the Torah says an ox gores. The Gemara says it means any animal. Why does the Torah use the word ox? Because the most common animal to do that is an ox. But if a cow, you know, just ran into a person and killed them, so then it would be the same thing. You have to kill the animal, it can benefit from it, and so on. But the only reason why Bala Shernoki, why the owner of the ox is free at this moment, is because this is the first time the ox ever did it. The first time the ox ever killed a person, so therefore it's like, how is the owner supposed to know that the ox is going to go kill people? Most oxen don't kill people. But now the Torah continues. What happens im shur nagachu mitmel shilshim? But what happens if it was an ox that gores habitually, meaning mitmel shilshim 2 days ago and 3 days ago?
How we did it if you kill him
after? One second. And the owner was warned, velo yishmerenu, and he still didn't watch his animal. So then, behemis ish ayayisha, then, and the axe kills the man or woman. So asher yisakel, the axe gets stoned. Vagamba all of you must, literally it means the owner also dies, but that's not what it means. He doesn't die. We'll see in a second what the pasuk means. It's similar to the eye for an eye thing. It doesn't mean the owner dies. It means he has to pay redemption for the death that he caused. Now, the Gemara learns out, when it says mitmel shul shem, meaning it's not only tmel shul shem, it means the ox scored three times. Once an ox scores three times, he becomes what's called a mu'ad. A mu'ad means an ox who's designated and his habit is to gore. And because of that, the owner has a stronger obligation to watch him than an animal that doesn't gore three times in a row. Now we know in Torah, Chazaka, an established pattern is three times. So, when an ox gores three times, we can assume that this is a goring type of an ox. So the owner didn't watch him. If the owner didn't watch him, he's negligent for what happens. So now the question is, as all the Mefarshim ask, if the ox kills somebody once, you kill the ox, how is it possible that the ox killed three people, and then you finally, why didn't you kill him the first time?
Kill the other people.
What?
The other times he gored, but they didn't die.
No. It's he actually killed people. So that there's a bunch of answers over here of what it means. Number one, here he brings down six answers from the commentaries of how it's possible that an axe killed three times without it having been put to death. So number one, like this, and let's not discuss the racism or whatever it is, but number one is, if the animal killed goyim, non-Jews, then the Torah does not kill, you don't kill the ox. But as far as the ox doesn't know the difference between Jews and non-Jews, so as far as the ox is concerned, he became an ox that gores people. So therefore, it's possible that the axe scored three non-Jewish people, and therefore you didn't kill the axe yet, and therefore the fourth time he killed the Jew. Secondly, it's possible that the axe did kill three Jews. So why didn't he kill them the first three times? Because he killed people that were called what's called treifa, deathly ill. A person that's on the verge of dying, if he's murdered, you don't get murdered. Why? Because he's not definitely alive, so to speak. He's not going to be able to live for an extended period of time. So what happens if the ox gored was called people that are treifa, meaning they're ready to die from this illness that they have, and it's not an illness that could be cured. So again, you wouldn't kill the ox because he killed basically dead people, even though they're still alive. Third way is, a very practical way, the ox gored people, he killed one guy, and the ox ran away. You couldn't find him. Then the ox comes back, gores another person, and again runs away, and you can't find him. Listen, it happens by people. People shoot, and they run away, and you don't catch him. No, but you know which ox it is. The fourth way is that the ox gored three people, but they didn't die yet. And until the people die, you don't do anything to the ox. Then when he gored the fourth person, all four died together. In other words, by then, everybody died. So now, he's responsible for the first three murders too.
Do they have to die for him to be responsible?
The Torah says clearly he dies. If an ox gored a person, he died. If not, you just pay damages. What?
Could there be a scenario that the ox gored somebody and it died? The owner knew, nobody else knew, but he didn't report it, so therefore...
Well, if there are no witnesses.
It says in English that even its owner shall die. You're learning that we should redeem it.
We don't know yet. We didn't get there yet. The Pasuk literally translated Vagam Bal of Yumas, the owner dies. But we'll soon see that that's not what the term means.
So the ox gored...
What?
Has to be that if Shore did it, that the fifth person has to die, but somebody can be alive after this. Can survive.
No, it says only if they died.
But if he didn't die?
Then it's not.
He's not responsible at all, the owner.
No, you have to pay damages.
No, but if he does it three times, it's not a pattern.
He does.
So after three gores and the guys are alive, and he does it fourth time, he's not responsible?
One second. We didn't learn the psukim. We didn't learn the psukim about the laws of ox goring oxen. Let's step back a second. I am responsible for my money, for my property damaging others. Correct? Why am I responsible for what my property does? It's not me. So we discussed, because I have an obligation to take care of my property. Right? If my dog bites somebody, I have to pay. I can't say to the guy, listen, I didn't do it, go bring my dog to court. I mean, go take his money from his savings account. Today's dogs probably have more money than the people do. It goes on with the way people treat dogs today. But anyway, so therefore, the Torah says, why am I... Remember last week we learned that if my kid damages somebody, not in today's Torah law, but in biblical law, I don't have to pay because I didn't do it. My kid did it. He has no money. He's not responsible for his actions anyway. But I am responsible if my animal damages, the Torah says, because you had an obligation to watch your property. Therefore, the din is... If my ox gores another ox or damages property, depending how he does it. For instance, ki yigach sher, when an ox gores, for the first three times, it's an uncommon damage for an ox to gore. If an ox goes into my backyard and eats up my fruit, that is normal damages for an ox. An ox eats. So if I let my ox out, I have to make sure it's muzzled, or else if he's going to eat your property, I'm going to have to pay for it. The first three times an ox gores, it's very uncommon for an ox to do it. So therefore the halacha is, a tam, meaning the first three times an ox gores, you only pay half damages. That means if my ox gored another ox, and the ox was worth $100, I only pay $50. Second time, again, because it's not a normal thing for an ox to gore. So therefore, the Torah says, listen, you're not responsible for your animal's craziness. And I don't have to think that my animal is going to go gore people. Once my animal does it three times, then and you were warned, it has to be behuad bevalv, you were warned that they said to you, hey, you know, watch your ox because it's already a goring pattern already. So then you pay full damages. So anything which is uncommon has a payment of half damages. If it's a common type of a damage, I have to pay full damages. Why? Because it's something as the owner of the animal, I have to assume and think that it's possible for my animal to do it. And therefore, I am responsible for the animal's doing in a full damage. Now, for an axe to kill a person, it's really not a common thing. So the Torah says, he killed even a person once. You kill the axe. If he damaged a person, caused them injuries, you pay half damages, not full damages.
He's shor mu'ad now?
After three times, he's a shor mu'ad. So then the Torah says...
The first three times, if he injures the
person, you pay half damages of what it was. Right. If he killed the person,
you kill
the animal.
What? The victim... Like, if an axe is worth $100 and another person's axe damages it and they only get $50, well, why does that person who got damaged, why did they have to incur a loss?
She's asking me. Please let me answer the questions. What?
Why did they have to incur a loss?
And if the animal itself fell off a cliff, why do I have to incur a loss?
You're sharing the ill fate.
So it's an accident. You're saying it just happened.
Stuff happens. What happens if an animal is walking somewhere, okay, and gets damaged and hurt by itself?
Okay, but
why does the owner of the animal have to incur damages? Because this is called rotten mazel. That's all. If I caused the damage, I have to pay. Sometimes the Torah says, we're not holding you responsible for the whole thing because it wasn't your fault. Why? Because you don't have to think that your axe is going to gore, because for an axe to gore is uncommon. If it's a common damage, then you have to pay full damages. Understand? That's the difference. So, if the ox gored and got out of it somehow, ran away or whatever it is, so then it's possible that it can kill a person three times and still not be put to death, and then finally the fourth time. Or, like we said, there was not a witness, or one had, for instance, another answer is, what happens if the ox killed three animals? And then it kills a person, so then you would also kill the ox. Why? Because by then already the owner had a responsibility to watch the ox. So even though he didn't kill three people yet, he only killed the first person, but you would still kill the ox because of... Or, like he says, then you would have to pay... Not only do you kill the ox, then, like we said, the owner is supposed to die, or assume we'll soon see what it means. But then there's a din of a mu'ad.
Every case, if the shore kills something, you kill them, you stone them.
Only if he kills people.
Well, even first time.
Yeah.
But now you say something else.
I didn't say something else. If the ox kills a person the first time, you stone the ox. What But the owner doesn't pay anything. Uh-huh. What happens if the ox killed three people already, and this is the fourth? So not only that, the pasuk says, "The gamba, all of you must." The owner also dies.
Excuse me, but shor mu'ad is only if he killed a person and he died. In other any case, it is not shor mu'ad.
Sure, he is. If an axe gores three times, it's a mu'ad.
Without killing, without death.
Mm.
the ox runs away, how is it the guy's fault?
It's not his fault, but the bottom line is, you know that your ox was a goring type of an ox. You had the greater responsibility to take care of him. That's
if
all.
If he runs away, you can't catch him.
Huh?
If he's running away, it's not in your proper hands.
So then when you finally came back, you're still responsible to go get him.
Yeah.
Now, the Torah says, though, the gam ba'ol of yumas. Now, what is ba'ol of yumas? One second. Ba'al of Yumas, the Gemara explains, means Misa Bidei Shamayim. Meaning, you will die by God earlier. Now, obviously, for that you could do tshuva, because for heavenly punishment, Hashem allows you to do tshuva. And if you do tshuva, nothing will happen to you. But otherwise, it means that the Gam Ba'al of Yumas, the Gemara learns, it cannot mean by the courts. Why can't it mean by the courts? Because there's another pasuk that says, So Rashi says, because it says in another pasuk, it says like this, Meis Yumas, the Torah says, if a man kills another man, in a different pasuk, the Torah says, if a man kills a man, he's a murderer, you kill him. So what does the Torah basically say over there? If you killed somebody, you get killed. But if your property kills somebody, you don't get killed by Beis Din. So what does the Torah mean over here? You will die. So we must say, the Gemara says, it doesn't mean court killing you, it means Hashem kills you. But in addition to that, the Pasuk says, in the next Pasuk, in Kefad Yushas 11 Pasuk Lamed at 424, he says, when an atonement payment will be set against him, V'nasan Pidyan Nafshe, you have to give a redemption of his life, whatever the judgment will be against him. So what does this mean? It doesn't mean im, if. If you take the pasuk literally, it means, okay, if Bezin makes it pay, you have to pay. It doesn't mean here if. This is one of the three ims in Chumash, that it means when, not if. Similar to what we'll learn soon, im kesef talve doesn't mean if you lend money, it means when you lend money, don't take interest. In Kaifa Yushasalov means, in addition to the facts that the ox was killed, stoned, in addition to the fact that you die from God, because death came about through you, in addition to that, you have to give redemption money. But the Pasuk is not clear. What does it mean, redemption money? What does the Pasuk say? V'nasan pidyan nafshe. You have to give the redemption money of his soul. Whose soul?
He's also.
His or the guy that got killed? So, the great sages of this class are arguing in the argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Rashi brings down the famous Gemara. The Pasuk says you have to give redemption of his soul. Now, whose soul?
The owner of the ox.
It means redemption.
So one opinion says, the owner, the guy that killed. I mean, the owner of the ox. Because you need to redeem your soul. You're really supposed to die. So God says redeem your soul. That's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Shmuel's opinion says no. You have to give the redemption for the one that you killed. Now, how do you figure out the redemption of the soul money? Again, the good old Torah way. How much he's worth as a slave in the market. You sell him, how much would he be, such a guy would be sold as a slave. So one opinion says, you evaluate the owner of the ox who killed the person, how much he would be sold as a slave. And therefore, he needs the redemption, so he gives the redemption of his soul, whatever his value is. And the other opinion says, you pay the value of the one that got killed, you killed him, you need to redeem his soul, so you have to give it. Who do you give it to? No. You give it to the guy, the family. The family. Everybody says you give the money to the family. The question, how much do you give? What?
If it's redemption of the owner.
Doesn't matter, you give it anyway to the people. What?
You said there were six explanations of
no.
I got five of them. I don't know if I got the sixth one or not.
The sixth one I didn't say. The sixth answer was that the witnesses saw the axe, but they couldn't recognize the axe. They didn't know which axe exactly it was. So you can't kill him. And then afterwards they were able to recognize the axe. That's all. Okay, so now the din is you have to give to the Yorshim, to the inheritors of the one that died, the one that was killed. Now, this din applies, even though the Torah says if he gored ish or isha, it means even if you kill a kid, a katan. Even if it's a minor, it's still murder. I mean, if you murder a kid, it's still considered murder if the kid's over 30 days old. So, now, what happens though, interesting halach over here, what happens if Reuven's axe killed Shimon? Okay? So Reuven has to pay redemption fee. What happens if before he had a chance to pay the redemption fee, he died?
Take it out of his will.
So the question is, do his kids have to pay it? And the answer is, the halach is they don't. Why? Why?
Because we don't know which soul is being redeemed.
No, that's not the reason. His death was his redemption.
Redemption
is he died. Is whatever the redemption is, he died. It doesn't matter if it's this money or that money, but his death itself is, like he says, because they don't have to pay it. Or, what happens if the owner of the ox was a kid under bar mitzvah? 10-year-old kid was given a present, an ox. And his ox kills somebody, God forbid. So you put the ox to death. You kill the ox, but the kid doesn't have to pay. He's not bar mitzvah. His father's not responsible.
Does he have to pay after bar mitzvah?
No.
Parents are not responsible for the children,
did? The same thing happens with the wife, right?
If the wife owns an axe, the same thing, she has to pay.
It's everything.
She has money.
So she owns the debt. No, but the difference is, like we learned last week, right. If a woman damages, or an eved damages, they are responsible for their actions. So they have to pay. Now they have no money. So it's a debt that they have to pay eventually. If she gets divorced, or widowed, or David becomes free, whatever. A kid is, to begin with, not obligated in the damages. So if he's not obligated in the damages, then he doesn't have to pay for it.
As if my children did something, they are not responsible for anything?
We said in today's law they are, but not in Torah law.
Torah law, no.
No. Okay, then...
On these two different opinions of the value of Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah.
Is halacha like Rabbi Akiva?
Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. But Rashi brings down both, interestingly, because in logic, it should be the one you killed. And that's why Rashi brings down Rabbi Ishmael's opinion first. Because if you think logically, you give the redemption of his soul. Who's the his soul? Is the one that you got, that the one you, that got killed. So the halach is never logic. Okay, and the Torah continues. A ben yigach, a bas yigach, in pasuk lamed aleph. Whether it kills a boy or a girl, kamishpat azeh yosela, you do this judgment. Meaning, even if he killed a kid, like we said before, it doesn't matter. Even if it's just because somebody can come, what Mefarshim explained, like Ibn Ezra explains, Lucheira would think the guy should have said to the parents, why didn't you watch your kid? You know, you should have protected your kid. Why do you? It's not my fault that you didn't protect your kid. So the Torah says it doesn't matter. Kamishpat Azay Yasula, you do the same thing. Because there's no difference in that. Okay, then it says, Din Kefir is only. Okay, that din we learned already, really, that this din of the redemption money is only when your axe kills somebody. If you kill somebody, there's no way you can redeem your soul. Then the Torah says you got to get killed and there's no way out of it.
What is it? What did you say, Rabbi?
There's no, you, if somebody kills somebody, you can't pay money and get out of being killed. You have to get killed. Okay.
What about a non-Jewish child? Are they responsible for
this? This then only applies to Jewish people.
So you're saying that they...
Then otherwise it would be damages. That's it. Now, the Rabbeinu Bachai explains that this whole din of killing the animal is not, like somebody mentioned the word before, it's not revenge against the animal. Because you can't punish somebody who has no choice, free choice, or understanding to do right or wrong. Like you said, why can't you punish a kid? Why can't you punish somebody who's mentally retarded? Because they have no understanding. You can't punish somebody for no understanding. The axe is not punished or put to death because the axe is so one explanation is the fact that something terrible came about through the axe, you kill him. But there's another concept over here, is actually a punishment for the owner. That the owner should know, it's, life is not free for you, just let your axe go around and do whatever it wants. If it damages, if your property damages somebody, it's a fine that we're going to give you that you're going to lose your axe, it's going to get killed and nobody can benefit from it. And therefore, the person, therefore, will be more careful of taking care of his stuff. Okay, now the Torah starts a new pasuk. In Lamed Beis it says, "Im eved yigach ha-shorei ama." And here is another illogical din of the Torah. Welcome to the Torah. What happens if the axe gores an eved? In other words, he doesn't kill a regular person; he kills an eved ama, a goyish slave. So they're like we learned last time; they're partial Jews. You know, they're obligated in mitzvahs like women, but they're not full-fledged. You know, obligated in all the mitzvahs. So the pasuk says, what happens if you kill an ox? The slave, I mean. Kasef shleishim shkalim yitin ladeinov. You give 30 shekels to the owner. Vashar yisakel, and the ox gets stoned.
It's very strange.
It's completely illogical din, but the din is as follows. It doesn't matter, like by people, we estimate them how much they're going to be sold as a slave, and that's how much you pay. By an eved, the Torah says it doesn't matter if the eved's worth $1,000, $1,000,000, or $1. If the ox gores somebody's non-Jewish slaves, you have to pay 30 shekels to the owner, regardless of the value of the slave. V'ashar yisakel, and the ox gets stoned. What?
It's a very strange way of this sentence. It's actually written... Im shor igach aeved, not an eved igach shor. It seems like eved gore the shor.
No, im eved igach asher means if a slave the axe gored.
But if you read like this, it's like
the Torah changes the lashon because it speaks a ben yigach basigach. So then, in language, you say im eved igach asher yama. What happens if the slave is what was killed by the eved by the axe? So you have to pay shleishim shkalim. It doesn't matter how much it is. No.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Is this all true in today's laws? Is this all true in today's laws?
In today's Torah law.
US, London, whatever.
In China they do like this. China! But not in America. First of all, half of these dinim, there's a din that any din of knas, a fine, in order to be able to collect fine, the Torah fine I'm saying, not when you fine somebody, you need to be a bezdin, that's what's called smuchim ish mi pi ish from Moshe Rabbeinu. They needed to be ordained person from person all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu. These things only apply when there's a bezdin, you know, the original bezdin in Yerushalayim. Today these dinim don't apply as far as if an axe gore, you don't kill the civil law. I'm saying is different, but in Torah law, you don't stone the ox, you don't do anything like that. But there is a concept in halacha of fining people in a way, not Torah fines, but monetary fines that people shouldn't behave wrongly. In other words, the rabbis in a community have the halachic authority to fine people for whatever it is. I'll give you an example. If a guy is getting drunk too much and acting, misbehaving drunk, even today, a bezdin in a shtetl, let's say, would have the ability to say, next time you get drunk, you're paying $1,000. And the guy would have to pay. Or, I mean, things like that. You know, the bezdin has a right to do such things. But to collect a ganef pays double. Today there's no din of a ganef paying double. A thief doesn't pay double today. Because the double is a fine. And the fine you don't pay today. Even in Torah law. Only when, yeah.
How much is the shloshim shkalim? At that time, was it like a big amount? Was it like average?
Rashi makes the cheshbon over here. When it says shloshim shkalim, Rashi says, shekel is 4 golden coins, which is a half of unkia. But a shekel, yeah, I mean a shekel, 30 shekel, I think a shekel is something like 0.8 ounces of silver. Three over there is 3 half of shekels. A shekel is like 0.8 ounces. So this is 30 times 0.8, no, so...
How much is it?
It was a decent
person who would be sold as a slave.
It'll probably be less. Yeah.
So 24.
It's probably less than average.
24 ounces of gold or silver?
Silver.
Silver.
Not 24 ounces of gold, a lot of money. In those days, silver was worth more.
More than gold?
Avraham Avinu paid 400 shekel kesef. This is less than a tenth of that. From Marisa Machpelim. Shekel Kesef.
How much did Yoni pay?
Abraham Avinu paid for me too.
Because.
How much did Yoni pay and how much did Moshe pay?
I don't know. They didn't tell me yet. Okay, let's just start. Let's start the next pasuk. Let me give an introduction to the next pasuk. We learned until now that you are responsible if your property damages somebody. If your axe damages somebody, whatever.
Your
car is you. No. Unless if you're not in the car and your car slids down a hill and damages, then it's your property. But if you're driving a car and you damage somebody, it's not your car, it's you. It's like shooting an arrow. Which is, by the way, an interesting concept. It's not for now, though. If your car isn't parked, and the car on its own backs up and hits somebody, it's not you, it's your property. Okay, but what happens? Now, normally, what happens if it's not my property and it damages somebody? Then I don't have to pay. There's one exception to this. There's something that doesn't belong to you, but the Torah makes it yours that you should have to pay. And that is the next psukim that we're going to mention next week, is if somebody digs a pit in the street. You walk out in the street and you dig a pit. It's not my pit. It belongs to the city. The fact that I made the pit, even though legally it's not my pit, it's not my property, the Gemara says the Torah makes it yours. The Torah makes it yours that you're, in which respect? That any damages that happen in this pit, you're obligated to pay because you made the pit. Or the Torah is going to say, even if you didn't make a pit, like you have in the street, you know, these holes in the underneath the street and they're covered. The metal. What happens if somebody goes and just takes off the metal? They didn't even dig the pit. They take off the metal.
Somebody did that in New York, by the way.
And somebody gets, and we'll see people or animal, whatever. And there are damages in the pit because of you. A guy could come along and say, I didn't even make the pit. All I did was uncover the pit. I didn't even do anything. The Torah says, it's your pit, and any damages that happen in this pit, you're responsible for. Because you were negligent. Okay, to be...
Next week, we all go to prison.